Retired Army Colonel David Hackworth, one of the most decorated and controversial officers in the modern military, died Wednesday in Mexico at the age of 74. Hackworth was said to have been the model for the character of the renegade Colonel Kurtz, played by Marlon Brando in the film Apocalypse Now, but that label doesn't begin to capture his life and career. Hackworth was born on Armistice Day in 1930, and after running away from an orphanage, he enlisted in the Army at age 15. Fighting in Korea, he won his first Silver Star before he was old enough to vote, and was wounded 4 times before that conflict ended. In 1965, he went to Vietnam with the 101st Airborne Division. He served 6 years in Vietnam, earning a reputation as one of the Army's toughest, most dedicated, and innovative soldiers. Known in the theater as Hack, he was usually seen wearing jungle fatigues and clenching a cigar in the corner of his mouth. But Hackworth grew disillusioned with the war and the American military, and detailed his reasons in a 1971 interview on the ABC program Issues and Answers. Vietnam, he said, was a bad war, one which can't be won, and he predicted the Saigon regime would fall within 4 years. Though his prediction would prove accurate, his comments ignited a national controversy, and military leaders did their best to discredit him. Hackworth left the Army after the interview, moved to Australia, and eventually wrote a best-selling memoir called About Face. He later served as a correspondent for Newsweek in the Gulf War. Terry Gross spoke with Hackworth in 1989 when About Face was published. She asked him to talk about his experiences training and leading troops.
50% of all casualties in Vietnam came from mines and booby traps, from these little insidious damn things that blew up and tore off your leg or killed you. And the total training that was given on mines and booby traps were 5 hours. There was no training devices like a little firecracker device that would explode when the soldier went through a training field and spray him with red paint so he'd know that he tripped a mine and was wounded. But at the same time, every full colonel and above in Vietnam had an air-conditioned trailer. And I became so insane about the way we were training, and I needed to know what it was all about and what we were happening, that I put on a private's uniform and wore a private's dog tags, a boy named Bob Cena, and went right through the training so I could find out what was happening, and I was appalled with what was happening. And so I took my troopers and trained them at night and trained them on Saturday and Sundays and so on to ensure that they got the right stuff. Because when they finished that training, they were on a jet airplane, and a few days later, they were walking in the jungles of Vietnam.
One of your missions in Vietnam was to take over a sick battalion, a battalion that was in disarray, and to try to turn them around. When you got there and saw the troops, you found that at the command post there were portable toilets, plastic coolers, but the troops were living in complete filth and disarray. They weren't even covering their feces. That there was just this incredible difference between how the two groups were living. Would you describe that a little bit?
Well, that was the 4th Battalion, 39th. They kind of called themselves the Hard Luck Battalion because shy of my arriving, they had kind of waited around in minefields for 6 months and taken 500 or 600 casualties and hadn't really engaged the enemy. And it was a very demoralized unit. And in Vietnam, minefields were where the enemy was. The whole focus was on body count. So you went into minefields and it just blew the guys' brains away because every time they put their foot down, they didn't know whether they were going to have a foot, going to have a leg, going to have a life. And do that for 365 days, and hey, it'll do something to your brain. And so I had to change that, and I had to win these young 19 and 20-year-old boys to my way of fighting, which was, I'm on your side. I am not going to waste you. You are the most precious asset in the world, and I'm not going to just slam you up against a minefield or an enemy in a fixed position for glory or for a few medals or to make some points with my boss. And so I was a very frugal commander, and that spirit went down to my troops. And within 5 months, that battalion started calling themselves the Hardcore Battalion. And they, at the end, had killed over 2,500 enemy at the price of 25 American dead, 25 of our comrades who were killed. And that is, to me, the end result. If you could do that with a drafty battalion that started in that kind of raggedy condition, and they turned out to be a Praetorian Guard, it was just a byproduct, Terry, of leadership.
When you retired from the military and your own military record was called into question, a couple of the things that were raised were controversial things that you had been doing while you were in Vietnam. Like, for instance, you ran, a massage parlor whorehouse?
Well, I had the best little whorehouse this side of the Mekong Delta River. But what was important, the reason that we had it was not unlike the French Army when they were in Vietnam. They had the same type of service for their little troops. And it was because we had syphilis that was in epidemic proportions around this area. We had heroin in the same kind of condition. So I put everything off limits. And warriors are warriors, and they like to fight, and they like to do other good things. And so instead of taking the problem of having the heroin brought into my base or the syphilis brought in, we corrected that by providing that good service for the Allied troops. And, you know, the function of a good commander is to look after his soldiers, and I always looked after my soldiers.
You had a heroin amnesty program. Describe briefly how the program worked.
Well, at that time, about 20% of the U.S. command in Vietnam had a problem with heroin. And so what I did with my doc, a medical doctor, medically trained and all that good stuff, was very easy to see who was sticking a needle in his arms, because we were in the tropics and they had their sleeves rolled down. So it was just a question of identifying those guys, putting them under a medical program the doc ran. He brought them down on morphine, and then we got them home. And the Army's way of dealing with this was to give everyone a bad conduct discharge. And I felt that they were victims, not unlike they'd been shot on the battlefield, and I felt it was my responsibility to get them home in good order. And so that's what our program was about. At the end, when they went out through Camp Alpha, they had to urinate in a little bottle, and this bottle could be read, and it could be told if they had been on heroin in the last 6 or 8 months. So I just sent another boy with them. We just out-G'd the whole system, and the other boy took a leak in the bottle, and they read out his urine, and the guy that had been using the heroin went home and was free, and he didn't have a $300 or $400 a day habit, and he could walk away from that terrible experience. So again, I was looking after my troops, and as long if I hadn't bit the hand that fed me, none of this would have come up. But
how did you get away with it for as long as you did?
Well, we were very competent and good, and we were winning all the ball games. And it's my experience that the commanders will suffer all kinds of insubordination and bizarre, weird behavior as long as you're winning ball games. And we indeed won ball games right until the day I left that country.
Retired Army Colonel David Hackworth speaking with Terry Gross in 1989. Hackworth died Wednesday. He was 74.